You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Man's Life on Earth and in the Spiritual Worlds. Given in England in 1922, this is Lecture 5, given in London on the 16th of November. Today I shall have something to tell you about the spiritual powers and beings living supersensibly in the environment of man, and having a share in his earth existence. You will realize that the relations between spiritual beings in the supersensible world and their intercourse with one another are different from the conditions of the life of men during their earth existence, and that for this reason it is really very difficult to express facts concerning the nature and the activities of supersensible intelligences and beings in human speech, which is fashioned for the expression of human affairs. You will therefore understand why it is that many of the expressions seem to bear the stamp of being coined from human conditions and relationships. Such expressions describe truly, but because they are taken from human conditions, they are naturally pictorial in character. As men, we have nature around us, nature with her different kingdoms, mineral, vegetable, animal, and also the physical human kingdom. Nature around us has behind it a second nature, as it were, a spiritual, supersensible nature. Man perceives ordinary nature with his senses. He does not perceive supersensible nature that is behind. Yet for all that, it has a powerful influence upon his earth existence. The second thing to be borne in mind is that man has a physical nature within him, and that when he looks into his inner being, he perceives this physical nature as his instincts, as his passions. It is all astral, of course, but it streams up out of physical nature. What man perceives in this way, within him, through his instincts, impulses, passions, has below it a kingdom of beings, having an inner relation to man, but of a subhuman nature. When we look around us with our senses, we see the surface of nature, the external side of nature, and behind that we surmise the existence of a supersensible nature. And when we look into ourselves and perceive ourselves through our impulses, instincts, passions, we have there to surmise the existence of a subsensible nature, lying beneath what is manifest there in our inner being. Supersensible nature, as it exists around us, can only be examined by a man who is endowed with spiritual insight, and who does not direct his gaze, as is the case with natural science, upon what takes its course within the strict laws of nature. Natural science is concerned with the investigation of what takes its course within these inexorable laws. The supersensible nature behind nature will never be discovered within that which natural science can investigate in this way. But it will be discovered when man strengthens his spiritual vision in regard to what is not in conformity with law, but which we usually say is subject to chance. In the world around us, everything that appears in weather conditions, in the irregularities of the atmosphere during the year, is subject to chance. If you think about the phenomena, let us say of a London fog, you will certainly be able to trace them back, as a general whole, to certain laws or rules, but not in their details. We may say of the phenomena connected with wind and weather that they are subject to chance. And when you find the newspapers saying what kind of weather there will be in the immediate future, you will probably not build upon it with the same certainty as you would upon the sun rising the following morning. The laws of nature are something different from what is manifested in wind and weather, and which men speak of as the element of chance in natural phenomena. A man can develop a certain prophetical gift in regard to the phenomena of weather, but this cannot be brought within the range of natural laws. It is something that is of the nature of inspiration or intuition. Now, beings live in everything that is manifest in this way in wind and weather. Beings who are not seen, for the reason that they have no body that is visible to the senses, possessed by earth beings. Yet the beings living in wind and weather do exist, nevertheless. They have a body consisting only of air and warmth, a body having no water or fluidic element in it, and no earth. Their body consists only of air and warmth. This body is formed, dissolved, and passes through rapid transformations. What we see in cloud formations, what we feel in wind, are only external expressions of the activities of these beings. The body is more in the background, but it is a body of air and warmth. So that when we look out into our atmosphere, into what surrounds the earth whereon we dwell as men, we have around us a world of beings, of air and warmth beings. These beings of air and warmth are what I have often called in my lectures and books the luciferic beings. These luciferic beings have a special and definite purpose in regard to men. Although they live in our often disagreeable weather, they are, nevertheless, beings which lay tremendous stress on the moral element in the human social order. So much stress do they lay on the moral element that they think man should have no physical body at all, at least that man should not have a body in which earthy and watery elements exist. They would like to form man into a species similar to their own, because then, being devoid of freedom, they would make him into a wholly moral being. He would have no physical nature at all. He would simply be a moral being. And throughout the course of a year, these beings wage a continual and terrible war to tear man away from the earth, to draw him into their sphere, to estrange and alienate him from the earth. These beings are especially dangerous to men who have a tendency to fanaticism or to visionary mysticism. Such men fall an easy prey to them, and they would like to lead human beings away from the earth and impart to man a kind of angelic nature endowed with which he would have no temptation toward what is unmoral, in quotes. However strange and paradoxical it may sound, the beings who are manifest in wind and weather, who pulsate in wind and weather through the air, hate human freedom above everything. They wish to have nothing whatever to do with human freedom. They want to destroy it. They want to make men into moral automatons, into good angelic natures. If I may be permitted to use an earth expression, they fight to the knife to attain this. In contradistinction to these beings, who have their fastnesses in the air, please do not misunderstand the expression, but as I said, I must express myself in pictures, are other beings about which I spoke in a certain connection last time. These are the beings who are concerned with the instincts, the impulses, the desires, the passions that are manifest in men. But these beings do not exist only in men. It is only their effects, really, that are to be found in men. These beings live on the earth, but men cannot see them because they never assume a body which makes them visible. They have a body which is to be found only in the elements of earth and water, and their activities and earthly happenings are to be seen in ebbs and flows, volcanic phenomena, and the phenomena of earthquakes. These phenomena, which, as you know, are so highly perplexing to natural science, are seen by spiritual sight to have behind them a world of sub-earthly beings. These sub-earthly beings are under the sovereignty of those powers which I have called in other connections the Ahrimanic powers. These Ahrimanic powers, with their different sub-spirits, have set themselves another task, down to the goblins and demons, are these sub-spirits contained in the earth and watery elements. When we look at the beings as they really are, we cannot be wholly enraged at them. Why should we be enraged at the luciferic beings? Their intentions are quite good. They wish to make men into moral, automatic beings. Men under their influence, however, would never be able to become free beings, only moral automatons. According to their light, they wish the best possible for men. The other beings have their fastness directly under the surface of the earth, and their action rises up into the digestive and metabolic functions of men. And what is seen as ebb and flow, or more seldom in volcanic or earthquake phenomena, is always present in an ebb and flow in the digestive metabolic system of man. These are the effects of aramanic activities. Whereas, then, the luciferic spirits have their fastness in the air in order to wage war for the moral against the earthly, these other beings fight to harden man, to make him like themselves. Man would then become exceedingly clever, incredibly intelligent. These beings cannot attain this directly. They want to attain it indirectly. And as a matter of fact, they have succeeded, as the result of efforts that have lasted for thousands of years, in developing a whole species of such sub-earthly beings. This they do by making themselves master of the instinctive nature of men. If a man's instinct nature is specially dissolute and strong, then these beings make themselves master of it. They seize upon it. And in such a case, the man has fallen prey during his life to the aramanic powers. When a man, during his life, has fallen prey to the aramanic powers, so that he is wholly given up to his passions, instincts, and impulses, is thoroughly dissolute, these beings can seize this after his death. And in this way there has already come into existence a whole population, a sub-human population of the earth. A sub-human population actually exists in the watery and earthy elements. The purpose of the aramanic beings with this sub-human population is somewhat as follows. They think, quote, "I will draw this instinct nature out of a man, and from it I will create a being of earth and water." Close quote. These earth-water beings inhabit the strata immediately under the surface of the earth. There they are to be found. And men who can look with supersensible vision into minds are quite familiar with them. They are beings whose existence is due to the fact that they have been torn away from man at the moment of death, and Ahriman and his powers wait in the hope that a man will descend in some incarnation as the result of a karma that is caused by impulses, instincts, passions, and be specially pleased by one such being, and will say, quote, "I do not wish to go back again into the spiritual world. I will incarnate after I have left my physical body, from which one emerges to a supersensible life, in such a sub-sensible being. Then I shall remain united with the earth. I shall die no more. I shall remain united to the earth. I choose to be a sub-sensible being." Close quote. Paradoxical as it may sound, it is nevertheless true that the aramanic beings always imagine that they will be able to allure so many men to their species that at some time the earth will be peopled wholly by such aramanic subhuman beings. And through this means, it is their aim to make the earth imperishable, so that it will not dissolve into universal space. One cannot help being astonished at this, because the aramanic beings are exceedingly clever and astute. We have thus two hosts in our earthly human environment, the host in the air that wishes to make man moral, but to lift him away from the earth, and the aramanic host under the surface of the earth that wishes to drag men down, to hold them forever to the earth. These two classes of beings live in the mineral kingdom, in the plant kingdom, in the animal kingdom, and also in the ordinary physical kingdom of men, in so far as it is not excessively given up to impulses, passions, and desires. In these kingdoms, they have to be reconciled to each other. Now, in very ancient times, that divinity called the Christian religion, for example, the Father God, established peace in the mineral, vegetable, animal kingdoms, and also in the external, physical, animal-human kingdom. That is to say, in very ancient times, peace was established by the Father God in the minerals, the plants, and the animals, and also in that animal nature of man, which is not raised into soul life, where he is not tainted with impulses, desires, and passions. If you take a crystal, a mineral, or a plant, you will see that no strife exists there between these two classes of beings. But if you are considering the penetration of the human body by the soul, you will see that that relationship between these beings is such that the Luciferic hosts say to the Ahrimanic hosts, quote, "We have promised the Father God that we will not wage war and fight for the minerals, the plants, the animals, nor for man, so long as he was an unconscious being, who did not as yet reflect, but lived like an animal. But for men who have acquired self-consciousness, we will fight to the knife." Close quote. And between the beings of air and fire and the beings of earth and water, there wages a terrible war for man. This is what man must realize. Today, humanity has acquired a far-reaching knowledge of external nature, in a realm where the Luciferic beings are reconciled with the Ahrimanic beings. But man knows nothing of what lives on the other side of the soul world, knows nothing of supersensible nature or of subhuman nature. Both these kingdoms contain beings who are waging a terrible war for men. That being who is called in the Old Testament Jehovah has, if I may use the expression, in the sense which I indicated at the beginning of this lecture, his seat in the moon. That is to say, Jehovah as a spiritual being belongs in the cosmos to what comes to expression in physical lunar phenomena. This moon being, Jehovah, has the following as his task in the world order. He is charged, as it were, with the task of leading back to the earth men who are descending to the earth from the spiritual and soul worlds in order to clothe themselves again in a body. But this Jehovah being reserves to himself another kind of connection with men on earth, namely the regulation of all that is related to the powers of generation. But the generative nature cannot be regulated by itself. It is connected with other instincts and impulses of man. Hence the Jehovah being needs helpers. The beings employed by Jehovah as helpers, in order that the instincts associated with eating and drinking shall be in harmony with the generative instincts, that the impulses and instincts shall be regulated, these beings are found by Jehovah, the moon god, in Mercury and Venus. We have then in the spiritual universe an alliance between the moon, or rather the Jehovah being in the moon, and all that inhabits the moon with Jehovah, and the beings in Mercury and Venus. The beings who stand under this alliance wish to govern from the moon, Venus, and Mercury, all that is of the nature of flesh and blood in man. Man is not really an earthly being. Forces from the universe play into him. The relationship of the beings which I have called the Ahrimanic beings of earth and water, with their fastness directly under the surface of the earth, to Jehovah and to the Mercury and Venus beings, is such that these Ahrimanic beings are not mature enough to approach the cosmic bodies in the sense in which Jehovah inhabits the moon and his helpers inhabit Mercury or Venus. They are condemned in the world order to have their seat not upon the moon, nor Mercury, nor Venus, but under the surface of the earth. You may realize from this that these beings, although they dispense with all morality, do not wage war alone against the air and fire beings, but above all against Jehovah and the Venus and the Mercury powers, and wish to wrench away from Jehovah what is his rightful domain. Jehovah is the ruler of the instinctive nature of man, but inasmuch as he regulates it from outside the earth, it is subject to a power other than the power of morality, although it is not of itself immoral. The human species on the earth is, as we know it, the result of Jehovah's rightful sovereignty. The cooperation of Moon, Venus, and Mercury beings were necessary in bringing this about. In opposition to the Jehovah race, which man is, these Aramonic beings have founded this other race of which I have spoken. A means that is essential for them is that which I described last time. While man sleeps, they approach him and tell him that the good is evil, the evil is good. Man accepts this with terrible facility while he sleeps, and then brings it down into his physical and his etheric body. Then the Aramonic beings think that they have achieved their goal as a result of their wicked insinuations. We may therefore say, man ought really to be entirely dependent in his lower nature on higher powers, the powers of the Moon, of Venus, of Mercury. His lower nature is not in itself evil and debased. It is evil because the powers hostile to Jehovah penetrate into man in the way described. It is the wish of Jehovah that these beings should only manifest in ebb and flow, in volcanic phenomena, in earthquakes. But these beings make every kind of effort to assert themselves in man as well. And so they not only sally forth from their fastness against the air and fire beings, but preferably against Jehovah and his helpers on Venus and Mercury. Thus man stands in a war, which on the one side is led by Jehovah and his hosts, fighting for righteousness in the universe, and on the other side there stand the hosts of Ahriman, whose cleverness far surpasses that of men, but whose aim is to act wholly against the moral nature, to make man into an automaton of cleverness. All this comes into play in man, from below upward, from out of the earth and water. And it extends upward into man because he has to eat the products which originate from earth and water. Man is not, of course, fed by the air or by warmth as such. On the other side stand the beings whose bodily nature is to be found in air and warmth. They, too, are immature, as the beings who are the enemies of Jehovah are immature. These beings of air and fire do not, from their fastnesses, make sallies alone against the Aramonic powers, but they fight against that which has to flow to man from Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, who represent the state of maturity, in contradistinction to them. Now the influences of Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, the distant planets, or rather the influences of their spiritual beings, work upon man principally in that which is to be found on the surface of his being, in the eyes, the ears, and in the sense organs, whereas Moon and Venus affect the inner being and inner organs of man. Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars affect the outer sense organs. The influence of Saturn, for example, is to be found essentially in the human eye, EYE. The beings of Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars, which wish to make men earth beings in the truest sense. That is to say, their aim is to give him senses which are incorporated as they should be into a physical human organism and remain on the surface. Their aim is to endow him with nerves which extend from the senses into his inner being. Saturn gives the senses. Jupiter gives the nerve continuations of the senses. Mars is a power which gives speech, for example. These beings wish to bring to man everything that is on the surface of his organism. These senses and nerves are projections of the human skin inward. The air and fire beings, of which I have spoken, wage a war to the knife against Jupiter, Saturn, Mars. They have their fastnesses in the air, and they express their power more especially in lightning, in what is of a fiery nature in the air. They would like to make man as a physical being into something that would only be of the nature of the eye and the ear, of what he is on the surface. They would like to pour what is the surface through the entire man, so that he would only be a being who sees and hears, eating and drinking nothing. They want to turn him into an angelic being. Now the Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn beings act, if I may use the expression, in speaking of such lofty beings, in an orderly way in external nature. They permeate with morality the pure nature element in external nature. They bring morality to man. They actually draw into man through the senses. But the air and fire beings wish to permeate man entirely with his sense nature, so that when he sees with his senses, he would see nothing but the moral element. In other words, their aim is to make man into a moral automaton. When you look around into nature, all that is revealed through force proceeds from the Mars beings. What is revealed through natural law proceeds from the Jupiter beings. All that is color and sound proceeds from the Saturn beings. But the air and fire beings do not wish man to become a being with a physical body. They would have him be only force, a law, that is to say, a being of thought, of color, of sound. They want to attenuate him, to make him into an angelic being. So you see, that although in external nature, the Moon, Mercury, Venus, Jupiter, Mars, Saturn beings are reconciled to each other, and held in equilibrium by the sun, a twofold war is waged for human nature. In the first place, the Ahrimanic and Luciferic beings fight against one another. In the second place, however, the Luciferic beings fight against all the Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn elements that proceed from beyond the sun. Then again, the Ahrimanic beings fight against the Moon, Venus, and Mercury elements. Behind nature and in man, then, there is a stiff war going on, and within this war man must win through to progress and freedom. In more ancient times he did this through the teachings of the old mysteries, and in this age he must do it through the result of spiritual investigation in reference to all that lies behind nature and below man. Ignorance of these things in the future must of necessity lead to the ruin of humanity. From what I have said, you will have realized that the Luciferic and Ahrimanic beings have certain qualities that are exceedingly strongly developed. The Luciferic beings in respect of morality, the Ahrimanic beings in respect of cleverness, intelligence. Now the beings on both sides constantly believe that they will attain their goal. They are forever beginning afresh their fight for the attainment of their goal, in the way that I have described. But disillusion awaits them on the earth in respect to the attainment of their goal. When, through modern initiation, man meets these Luciferic or Ahrimanic beings behind nature or below man, he finds them on the one hand to be in a continual state of frenzy, of victory. They press forward to their goal and will not be deterred, believing always and forever in their victory. On the other hand, however, perpetual disillusion from out of the earth awaits them. The life of this class of beings consists in a mood that alternates between a frenzy of victory and perpetual disillusion. It is possible to see how the Luciferic and Ahrimanic beings are disillusioned from the earth through the physical being of man. We can get the strongest impression of the disillusions suffered by Ahriman and Lucifer in hospitals or by sick beds and in asylums. It is here that Ahriman and Lucifer experience their greatest disillusion. These beings wage, as you know, a stiff war for the nature of man. But it is not well for them, in respect of the attainment of their goal, when, within human nature, they gain a victory over one another. It is altogether different when a victory is gained by Ahriman against the Moon, Venus, and Mercury gods, and different again when the air and fire gods gain a victory against Jupiter, Mars, and Saturn. But these victories are never complete. They amount to victories only because they are reinforced by the measure of success which these beings have against each other. But as a matter of fact, the successes which these beings have against one another are in the vast majority of cases only apparent, hence the disillusion. Suppose the Ahrimanic powers succeed in gaining a victory in the human body over the Luciferic powers, over those powers whose aim it is to permeate man entirely with what ought to be only on the surface, in the senses. Then, as a result of the victory of the Ahrimanic powers, man would fall a victim to diseases where there are tumor formations, or carcinoma, or again diseases of the metabolic system, such as diabetes. Where such diseases appear in a physical human body, Ahriman has gained a victory over Lucifer. But with this victory is connected the fact that the physical nature of man is for a time injured, and then it is of no use to Ahriman for the purpose of tearing the impulses and instincts out of man and building his own race out of them. From this you will get a seemingly paradoxical but correct view of illness. Disease in many cases is the only means whereby the good powers can save man from the clutches of Ahriman. And when Lucifer gains a victory in the nature of man over the Ahrimanic powers, which try to harden man, which wish to draw him down to their race of mere earth and water beings, man falls a victim to illnesses of a catarrhal nature, or to insanity. Here again the victory of Lucifer is contended. Hence it is that these Luciferic and Ahrimanic powers work perpetually with all their might for victory, but they are disappointed and disillusioned by the sickbed and in hospitals and asylums. For there they have proof that although they may fight, a victory for them is impossible. If you are able to look into the etheric nature of man, not his physical nature merely, but his etheric nature, you see there the same conditions for the disillusions of the Ahrimanic and Luciferic beings. For when in the etheric body the Luciferic powers gain a victory over the Ahrimanic powers, the man becomes an habitual liar. But when a man becomes an habitual liar, he becomes a non-moral being. He falls out of the world into which Lucifer wishes to draw him. Lucifer appears to tear man away from the earth, but instead of making him into a moral automaton, he makes him into a liar. And when man becomes an habitual liar, however paradoxical it may sound, the good powers have a weapon whereby they can take the man away from Lucifer. For in the course of karma, this can be adjusted. Whereas if Lucifer were to be victorious, the human race would be lost to the earth, would be lifted off the earth. And if Ahriman were to be victorious in the etheric body, or got near to victory, man would become obsessed, inwardly obsessed with cleverness. But when he is inwardly obsessed with cleverness, the cleverness remains in him, the cleverness possesses him. It gains a hold over the etheric body. And then again, Ahriman cannot drag the instincts and impulses down to him, because they remain fixed in the etheric body as a result of the obsession. So in many cases, the triumph of untruthfulness and of obsession is the cause of the Luciferic and Ahrimanic powers becoming the victims of great disillusions. Let us look at the astral body. Let us suppose that in the astral body the Ahrimanic powers are victorious, or nearly so. A man can thereby turn into an incontrollable egoist, but because of this he holds his instincts within him. Ahriman is not able to draw them out of him. And in this way, through this incontrollable egoism, Ahriman's booty escapes him. Again, if Lucifer is victorious or is near to victory, A man may, in his astral body, turn into an egoless dreamer, a visionary who is really not in his right mind. Such things as this do happen. At all events, a man may be, for a time, subject to them. And there, again, the luciferic powers are disillusioned. So you see, from this, how many sources of disillusion await the Ahrimanic and the luciferic powers on the earth. From all this you will see where man stands. In ancient times too, in the time of the old mysteries of initiation, man stood within this war behind the physical world. The first great mystery teachers were the messengers of the Father God. Their pupils were the gurus, and the pupils of the gurus were the chalas, the subordinate pupils. But the highest gurus received their instruction directly from the messengers of God, of the Father God. As I have told you, illnesses are the source of the great disillusions of Lucifer and Ahriman. Ahriman and Lucifer are stupefied by their disillusions. Such terribly clever and moral beings as are the Luciferic and Ahrimanic hosts are then overcome, defeated. Their consciousness is specially clear and vivid, so the state of stupefaction is all the greater. And hence the messengers of the Father God, undisturbed by Lucifer and Ahriman, could find the remedies for the illnesses. I told you last time how the Saturn element is cured by the moon element and so on. This is what happened in the ancient mysteries, where the messengers of the Father God could take man away from the disorder in which he was placed as a result of the war behind nature and below man. In our age, the disorder which man faces is by no means less than in ancient times, and the fact that man knows nothing about it in his ordinary consciousness has nothing to do with it. The disorder and confusion are there just the same. Man is torn hither and thither in the fight for him that takes place behind nature and below him. In our present age, when we cross the threshold and consciously see the spiritual world and this terrible war, this disorderly struggle for man that takes place behind nature and below him, we may look around in vain for the messengers of the Father God, who, for instance, gave the staff of Mercury and other symbols of healing to the old mystery doctors. We do not, however, as a rule, consciously come in contact with the terrible war that is waged between the retarded upper beings, the retarded Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn beings, and the retarded lower beings of the Moon, Venus, and Mercury. When we cross the threshold, we are in the midst of this terrible war of the upper powers with the lower powers, the fire and air beings, as ill-advised Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars beings, and the earth and water beings, as ill-advised Moon, Venus, and Mercury beings, confront each other like two armies. And a terrible war wages on the other side of the threshold. The sun is at first fiery and then darkens, and at the end has the appearance of a dreadful black disk. This was not the case with the ancient initiates, for they saw through that blackening disk. And out of it there came to them the divine messengers of the Father, messengers who were, for instance, the bearers of healing wisdom in ancient times. We modern men pass the threshold, and of course there is still this dreadful war. The sun becomes red, black, but it remains a black disk. We are driven backward and have to seek on the earth itself in order to find our way in the midst of the confusion of the war. And we come to the Christ, who is there as a spiritual being, having united himself with the earth through the mystery of Golgotha, and who says to us, quote, "Be not despairing, because the sun has grown dark. It has grown dark and black because I, the sun god, no longer dwell within it. I have descended and have united myself with the earth." Close quote. And when we then draw near Christ with inner devotion and heightened knowledge, and understand of what the mystery of Golgotha is, The sun, although it still remains a black disk and does not become clear and light, begins to enable us to hear what Christ says to us. We come to know the relationship of the Christ with the sun. In a certain sense, the sun, although it remains a dark disk, becomes a living essence which renders us able to listen to the Christ if we have, in the first place, developed a right relationship of soul to it. And it is the Christ who gives men the means whereby he may reconcile the upper with the lower powers, may reconcile what is above the black solar disk and those powers which manifest themselves around our earth as beings of air and fire with the powers that are below. Then we acquire landmarks for the curing of disease, as well as an understanding of other misfortunes which constantly disillusion Lucifer and Ahriman. And through the power of the Christ and the mystery of Golgotha, we come to be able to say what may sound very remarkable. The Ahrimanic and Luciferic beings are disillusioned by the evil that they cause to arise on the earth, disillusioned by their victories, by their partial victories. Their disillusionments must always come because they will continue to engender disease, obsession, lying, selfishness, and lack of egohood. They will constantly fluctuate between exaltation and the most dreadful disillusions. But it is given to the earth man, if he finds the relationship to Christ, not to despair where beings higher than he despair. Beings who will to take a path other than the path of that divine nature to which man belongs, and to which he must remain faithful through the course of the earth's existence. The central point of this divine nature is the Christ being, who once spoke to the ancient initiates through the sun disk, and who now speaks to us from the earth, taking the sun to his aid, so that when we speak about the Christ today, we are speaking of one who upon the earth can come to our side and lead us out of the terrible strife of the Ahrimanic and Luciferic powers against each other and against the upper and lower spheres of the gods. I shall tell you more about this next time. The end of Lecture 5.